Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of this week's Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Hi, Layla. How are you doing?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. So, last hour you told us that we had a question about prenatal supplements.
Yeah. This comes from, her name is Manette. Dear Dr. Hoffman, do you recommend prenatal vitamins? If so, which ones? Should any vitamin, like folic acid, be taken prior to pregnancy? Is it safe to take folic acid, or should dietary folate be the sole source of this vitamin? Some studies say folic acid may cause breast or prostate cancer later in life.
Oh, it's a lot of questions there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at the issue first of prenatal vitamins. If prenatal vitamins were necessary for the perpetuation of the human race, none of us would be here. You know, we would all died out. So,
yeah.
You know, we want to place an emphasis on a healthy diet, although under conditions of deprivation through, ages and ages, we still manage to reproduce. That being said, the environmental stresses and the quality of the diet make it necessary, I think, to take a prenatal vitamin.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the prenatal vitamins that are offered by gynecologists is that
a lot of them will contain regular folic acid.
And they contain a lot of artificial vitamins. They're very weak.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument about folic acid is that some people have trouble converting folic acid to its active form. They have a defect in the MTHFR methylation gene, and therefore they need preformed folate, which you can get from, guess what, foliage.
Yes.
Right? So if you eat like your greens, you're going to get a lot of it. Also, if you eat liver,
yeah,
it needs to be organic because liver is a toxic waste dump for
right.
pesticides and all kinds of junk from
the
environment.
The filter. Yeah.
Yeah, but organic liver would be a great source of folate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the reasons why people can't get our foundation formula multi is because we've changed it to include not folic acid, but methylfolate, which is the correct form. And I just saw a gal who was announced to me that she was pregnant, and I said, uh-huh. "Make sure you're taking this one." And I put, I gave her methylfolate because that's the most important one. That's the one that's responsible if you're deficient for neural tube defects.
Yeah,
that's the most terrible
and
kind
it's
of
the most bioavailable, right?
Yeah, so you want to get methylfolate at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
You probably want to give some extra vitamin D because
mm-hmm.
Having extra vitamin D actually increases the immune competence of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you make sure that you're not vitamin D deficient during the pregnancy and you'll impart the vitamin D to the baby. And the other thing that's important is lots of omega-3 fatty acids, in particular DHA.
Yeah.
But EPA may be important too. For brain development.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a smart kid, take a lot of, how smart do you want your kid to be? So, just make sure you take more DHA.
Yeah.
And, you'll be paying college and graduate school bills for ages.
And good eyesight as well.
Right.
And I think the whole folic acid and cancer controversy, I wonder if it's because it's in the form of folic acid.
It's unmetabolized, yeah. It's controversial. And I just, sometimes I... this is a big story, and I don't want to shortchange it, but I was just reading an article that states that folate helps to convert estrogen into less harmful forms. Folate. But it depends on your genes.
Ah.
So if you have a certain type of gene, you might be more predisposed to breast cancer, and folate will help. But
mm-hmm.
if you don't have that gene, it doesn't matter that much.
Right.
So
interesting.
It relates to genes. We don't, we now have the ability to test for genes. We're just beginning to test for genetic variations. And in the future, we might be able to really guide people, like, you really need to take this, or no, you should back off of this because it might actually backfire. By the way, I don't even think that folic acid causes cancer, in my opinion.
You don't think it's estrogenic? That was always a topic.
It's kind of an oversimplification.
Okay.
In fact, in this case, it's not estrogenic. It's actually beneficial in terms of estrogen profile.
Wow.
But that's folate. Atkins used to think that you could raise women's estrogen by giving them folic acid.
Hmm.
which was then what was available. That's, I don't think, really true. Mm-hmm. But there was a big study that looked at folic acid supplementation for cardiovascular disease prevention. They gave a lot of folic acid, and they found, it doesn't really prevent cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But, oh, by the way, there wasn't any increased risk of cancer. And it was thought that they might see an increased risk, especially of breast cancer, colon cancer. Said, well, it didn't help the heart, but it didn't cause cancer. So now there's a couple of studies that show, just this week, coming out saying that folate helps to, at least see if I can get this right, it reduces the risk of dementia, and it also reduces the risk of stroke.
Wow.
Stroke in hypertensive. So if you're hypertension, taking folate might be a good idea, even if your homocysteine isn't high. You know, we think of it as a way to lower homocysteine. Oh, you're okay, you don't need to take it, even if you don't have a high homocysteine. But if you have a high homocysteine, it's more likely you'll get a protective effect.
Wow.
So it's a, you know,
so more to find out in this area.
It's a great area for research, and I'm no longer recommending folic acid. I think people shouldn't freak out, because we've been using this stuff for years and years, and probably more benefit than harm, but we can do better.
Right.
We can do better.
Yeah. Thank you for your question, Manette. All right. This comes from Marlene. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I would like to take sublingual B12, but I don't know which one I should get. Which is better, methylcobalamin or cyanocobalamin? What's the difference, and which do you prefer? Thank you.
Well, it's kind of like asking, would you rather drive a Chevrolet, a Cadillac, or a Rolls Royce?
It depends on where I am.
It also depends on how much you can afford.
Right.
Because there's a price point around these
things. Oh, I thought it was being offered.
It's not free. You know, it's like, behind this door number one. It's also, there's cost considerations. Cyanocobalamin is fine for the vast majority of people. It's not dangerous or harmful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as bioavailable as methylcobalamin.
Okay.
And it's a little bit like the folic acid. I think that cyanocobalamin is fine. It's just cheap, generic B12.
Mm-hmm.
And it will probably fix a lot of problems. But for people who have... especially MTHFR defects in methylation, or big problems, you know, like they've got, you know, peripheral neuropathy, or they've got psychiatric problems, then we might want to use the methylcobalamin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more expensive. We use methylcobalamin at the Hoffman Center because we see a lot of people who have health problems and need targeted methylation with the methylcobalamin. So the sublingual is fine. Some studies suggest the sublingual doesn't make that much difference in absorption.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't intramuscular the shot the best way to get it? Because people will lack intrinsic factors as they get older.
But, you know, actually some new think on that is that the vast majority of people who even have pernicious anemia don't even need the shots that they can take. If they take enough oral B12, that they'll still absorb it. You know, look, there are times where I use the shots to supercharge people, where we really want to load them with B12 to push their pathways towards healing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your question, Marlene. All right. We have a question from Jane.
I wish there was a simple no, yes-no answer on these things.
I know.
We're making it kind of complicated.
I have one, and I can answer it.
Okay.
Jane asks, is there any truth to the fact that vitamin D sucks magnesium out of you? No.
There is
no truth to that.
Thank you. But some people, I think, are trying to sell vitamin D. You know, look, there's not much you can do to make vitamin D sexier. You know, it's like everybody sells vitamin D.
Yeah.
And people are trying to, like, jazz up. They're saying, well, this is my bioavailable vitamin D. It's got magnesium, and it's got vitamin K in it, and it's got all these cofactors that make it, well, I don't know. You know,
Jane, you should know that that magnesium actually converts vitamin D to its active form. So there's got to be a synergy there. It's not going to suck the magnesium out of anything.
Right.
So this is just completely wrong.
There is a connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that if you're magnesium deficient, your vitamin D metabolism is impaired. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Right.
So it actually makes sense to take magnesium when you're taking vitamin D. Maybe not precisely that instant. You don't have to put it in the same pill. But, you know, make sure you have adequate magnesium on board.
Yeah. It is an oversimplification when everybody's concentrating on one particular nutrient and not the rest.
Right.
You know, like calcium and osteoporosis for how many decades. So it's not all about the calcium.
Mm-hmm.
We need all of these. Thank you, Jane, for your question. Okay. This comes from Paul. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. A few months ago, I had attended, I'd seen my chiropractor, and he noted that my body appeared tired and stressed. He encouraged me to get more sleep, and even though I said that would be hard because I have a three-month-old baby at home.
Wait, I would switch chiropractors.
Yeah.
You never tell a woman that she appears tired and stressed. Never,
exactly.
Ever do
this
that.
This is Paul. This is the dad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
yeah,
sorry. Okay.
That's okay. But then his chiropractor advised that he should avoid the nightshade vegetables. Why would this be beneficial? And what does that have to do with managing the fatigue? Well, first of all, you've got a three-month-old. You do need more sleep. That's
right.
The first place we
right.
would try to start. So,
well,
nightshades...
You know,
nightshades are implicated in a lot of things like arthritis, autoimmunity, things like that. Anything that would place a stress on your body will cause fatigue. We don't know that much about Paul.
Given a choice between the three-year-old and the nightshades as the cause of this person's fatigue,
right.
I'd opt for the three-year-old.
Right. And this is a three-month-old. So
three-month-old, yeah.
Nobody's sleeping in the house. You're all up doing feedings and all of that.
Right. So, you know, on the nightshade theory is that there certainly is an effect. It might promote inflammation, arthritis.
Yeah.
For people who have certain health problems, there's, you know, maybe a 15% chance that elimination of nightshades could help. It's one of the culprits.
Mm-hmm.
And
that might be. And but for those of you who don't know, the nightshade family of vegetables include tomatoes, peppers of all kinds, including cayenne and paprika, eggplant, white potatoes. That means sweet potatoes and yams are okay. Sweet potatoes and yams are not nightshade, but the white potatoes are. And tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't aware that tobacco is a nightshade. So,
but the reason it kills you is not just because it's a nightshade.
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, Paul, get some sleep. All right. And if you're suffering from joint pain, you could try giving up the nightshades, but that's not what you're writing to us about.
Right.
Okay. All right. We have a question from Simca. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla.
Do you know what Simca means? It means joy.
Oh.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
There's actually a Jewish holiday called Simchas Torah, which means joy in the Torah.
Oh.
So it's kind of a nice name.
Oh, that's lovely. Simca writes, first, I would like to thank you all for the knowledge and advice. I'm an avid listener and so grateful for everything I've learned. I have a question for you. My 23-year-old son has been suffering from having impetigo scars on his face from a young age. However, he's generally healthy. What are the causes for these scars? In addition, are there any supplements he could take to prevent them? What's the best treatment for impetigo? He usually uses Bactroban cream.
Right. Well, Bactroban is a topical agent that suppresses the growth of staph, and it is somewhat effective, but it doesn't completely eradicate it.
Is that what causes impetigo? Is the staph
infection? Actually, excuse me, I might be wrong on that. It might be strep.
Oh.
I could look that up while you're talking. Let's talk a little bit about immunity. Because, you know, impetigo is like a weeping skin infection.
Mm.
And it is, it's actually something that the last time I took antibiotics, and I haven't taken antibiotics except for once in the last 30 years.
Fabulous.
Was during, or maybe more, 40
more
years.
More people should be able to say that.
Yeah, but I did take antibiotics during my medical residency, and I acquired, from probably contact with a patient, there are bad germs in the hospital, impetigo. And it's like I looked, you know, I went to my medical resident.
It's contagious.
Oh, it's very contagious. It really, children can spread it, you know, through contact.
Okay.
And it is... just gets all over your face and all over your body, and it's like weeping infection. Mm-hmm. So it's nasty and communicable, And it is treated, Bactroban is one of the treatments for it, which is a potent topical agent.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's important, it's important for your, Simca, for your 23-year-old son to make sure that he's maintaining a good, healthy immune system. I can imagine a 23-year-old boy doesn't have the greatest diet unless he's really in tune to that kind of thing. He may be having a mother like you who's tuned into us as well as her own health, likely. So taking care of immunity is ideal. Things to boost the immune system besides the typical, and these would actually be good for skin. Taking vitamin C, taking zinc can help heal. The zinc can help to heal possibly those scars. The vitamin C can help with developing collagen.
She's talking about scarring. And, you know, once scarring has occurred, it's really kind of hard to make it reverse. Sometimes the use of vitamin E capsules is helpful. There are various types of anti-scarring over-the-counter products that you can get at a regular drugstore. But I got to say that scarring is hard to reverse. In the future, they will probably come up with various types of anti-fibrotic injections that actually help maybe to break down the fibrosis in scars. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough thing. I'm looking for the precise organism that causes impetigo. And they just talk about the symptoms. It's caused by strep or staph. Actually, I was right.
Okay.
I was saying it could be caused by strep or staph.
Mm-hmm.
So MRSA is methicillin-resistant staph aureus, which is a really resistant type of skin infection. Typically, oral antibiotics will make it go away. But this is a person who might be pockmarked for life from the infection. And, you know, that's a tough thing to reverse.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There's an over-the-counter scar treatment, and once again, I'm going to use...
If he might benefit from things like dermabrasion.
There are various types of...
Which your dermatologist would do.
Mederma is the name of a product that I sometimes recommend, but it's best to use Mederma right after a... some sort of wound before the scarring becomes more difficult to reverse. But it's Mederma, Mederma.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually derived from onion skin. There's something about onion skin that helps to reduce scarring. And so the certain properties of that. It's actually a product that was developed in Germany. And there are many over-the-counter anti-scarring products. But I think from what I'm understanding there, the infection isn't persisting.
No.
It's the scarring.
It's the scars.
Now, for someone who has these types of infections, I would work on boosting immunity. We've had some people like that who've come here, and they have MRSA, which means it's very hard to eradicate. It keeps coming back. Diet modification, making sure that the patient has adequate zinc, giving them things to support immunity, like transfer factor.
AHCC.
Empower. And vitamin D actually may be helpful for killing bacteria. It's actually helpful for infections. Certainly vitamin C, perhaps selenium as an immune booster.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, iron deficiency will make it more likely that there's a problem. But iron excess can also...
Can feed
an infection. Yeah. So you have to check iron levels.
Yeah.
You know, oregano at high doses, olive leaf at high doses.
Yes.
Oregano has actually been shown to be a very efficient killer of staph and strep bacteria. Mm-hmm. So that's something worth considering. There's a product we like called oregacillin, and we, I remember one patient, we tanked him up on oregacillin, we gave him olive leaf extract. There was a benefit along with the immune-enhancing nutrients and vitamin D. Usually these patients are very low vitamin D. Again, we're not talking about this case because this case, it's healed over, and so we're not finding infection, but I'm just trying to provide an answer for people who have recurrent skin infections. Another topical agent that's helpful, I would use the Manuka. Manuka is a natural antibacterial. Manuka honey or Manuka...
supposed to be
cream.
Good for MRSA, too.
Yeah. It's the Manuka plant makes certain antibacterial compounds, mm-hmm. and they're transmitted to the honey that is made by the bees mm-hmm. that pollinate those plants, but also Manuka oil, which is, I use Manuka cream for minor skin inflammations,
I
infections.
Love
And I use it as an aftershave every day. It's great for the skin. It's
great moisturizer.
It's actually our product of the month, and I think we have it on our... When people sign up for our newsletter, there's a little prompt to check out Medermitz. And very inexpensive, very good skin product.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. I think that pretty much wraps up today's edition of Q&A with Layla. If you have any questions, please send them to...
radioprogram@AOL.com.
That's radioprogram@AOL.com. We will endeavor to answer your questions on the next edition of Q&A with Layla. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.